Welcome to Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton, where we equip pastors to take their churches from declining to thriving by pointing them to a new future and a new hope. Join us weekly for encouragement and practical advice in your pastoring journey.
So here we are back with more of Revitalize and Replant with Mark Clifton. We have just gotten back from lunch.
Oh, it was good.
So we're just kind of in a snoozing mode.
It was barbecue. We're in Kansas City.
Whoa, oh, man.
And it was good.
It was so good.
And we're at Midwestern.
By the way, what were those corn things?
They were corn nuggets.
I've never had one of those.
Never had a corn nugget?
It was unreal.
It was a deep-fried piece of corn.
You bet.
That's what it was.
What's not to love?
What's not to love? Oh, it was great.
It has cheese around it, too.
Cheese and corn.
So we're
in a nugget. It's a corn nugget.
With some ranch dressing.
I just like saying you've said that so many times.
When you dip that corn nugget in the ranch dressing.
We're at Midwestern Baptist Seminary, and the barbecue place that we ate is just up the street from us, which was – it's unhealthy that it was so close. But we had a good time. And saw Mark's grandson was there. He's going to school
here. He's a student here at Midwestern. Midwestern has an undergraduate school called Spurgeon College, and then the graduate school of Midwestern. My dad went to Midwestern. Mm-hmm. He was one of the first students here early on, and then I went here. My dad was summa cum laude, and I was not.
You were not.
You were not.
It was sort of came lately.
Barely came at all.
Anyway,
your grandson's redeeming the name.
He is.
He's this kid.
You know, the first time I ever preached in chapel here at Midwestern was in this the Spurgeon Library. If you think about Midwestern, it was the old chapel. So for years, Midwestern did not have an official chapel, just sort of a large gathering room, and that's where we had our chapel services. And so, a number of years ago, it was before Dr. Allen came, make that clear. It was my first time to ever preach in chapel. So I came in, and a couple of people speaking before me were just giving some testimonies. They were former students, and they said, you know, I remember coming to this chapel for this, that, and another guy said, I remember coming to the chapel for that. I got up to preach, and I said, so this was where the chapel was.
You were so focused on chapel.
I don't know why
we
say
asked this
like
guy
that.
To come speak.
I know. Of course, all the students crack up.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh, this was where the chapel was.
Well, that fits right in with what we're talking about today. Causes of church conflict. People who say things and do things that they shouldn't.
Hey, this is by our good friend Chris Crane, the Associational Mission Strategist for the Metro Birmingham Baptist Association in Birmingham, Alabama, the Iron City. And Chris and his team down there do some great work of revitalization and replanting, and we appreciate Chris. So Chris wrote this about church conflict, and we're going to link it to the show notes, and we want to share it with you.
All right, we're going to tell you what he has basically these 7 points, and every one of these happen in your church.
Yeah.
Some of them more so than others. And so we're going to have to move through these fairly quickly, but at least we're going to kind of paint the picture, and Chris does a great job of identifying these things. And the first thing is something that I know nothing about, and that's pride. people just often just act out of self-centeredness and ego and pride. And why is – first of all, we know why people do that, or we can philosophize about it. But in a church, of all places where you teach humbleness and love and kindness, why does pride take over?
Because people, including myself, we believe that joy and happiness is found when people make much of us. We just want to be made much of. We grew up wanting to be made much of. Everywhere we are. And in this age of social media where you want to see how many people follow you and how many likes you have, we want to be made much of. And that carries over into the church. And we want people to recognize us and know who we are and know how much work we do and value us and we're important. And, you know, how many times have I heard in revitalization, well, they're not necessarily sweet, but some senior adults who say, don't forget us. We're the ones that do the work around here. We're the ones that pay the bills around here. I mean, that's self-centered. Mm-hmm. There's no other way of putting it. because Jesus hasn't forgotten you, and that's all that matters. Whether I know you are, doesn't matter. Whether you're not doing stuff here on earth so that you can build up treasure someplace else. Yeah. The Lord's already given you a home in heaven. So pride, where we just want to be made much of, want people to know who we are, want our work to be affirmed. You know, and there's always, to me, there's always that balance between certainly you want to affirm your volunteers and be grateful for them. But on the other hand, they don't do it for that reason.
No, that's right.
And if you got to motivate people by making much of them, then something's wrong with your motivation, your folks' motivation. Mm-hmm. I want them to be motivated by the gospel, by what Christ has done for them, not because we're going to give them a great banquet and make sure they know how much in love and appreciative they are. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with loving and appreciating people. Mm-hmm. But if that's what motivates
them,
then that's going to have a short lifespan, and you're also sort of encouraging some bad behavior.
Well, and I think ongoingly, from a leadership perspective, you have to help cultivate and create. You might be walking into a church context. It is unhealthy, and pride has been allowed to live in people's hearts there.
And pride's competitive.
Pride is competitive. Oh,
absolutely.
That's right.
There's any time you find somebody dealing with pride, you finding somebody that's dealing with conflict.
Yeah.
You know, inner conflict.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
really struggling with something.
Yeah.
And many, probably many things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is where lifting up the virtue of humility all the time is so important. Here at our church, we value love and humility above all else.
And do they see it in you as a pastor?
That's right. And if you don't flesh it out, guess what? Your people aren't. Mm-hmm. You know, you what do they say? You know, you teach what you know, you reproduce who you are.
And when people, if you're a pastor and you're with some of your folks and somebody says, tell me about your church, and you inflate your church in front of your people.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Oh, we got 200 or 300, and your people are going, what?
No, we don't.
I mean, they see pride in you at that
That's
point.
That's exactly right.
Much better not, you know, to be humble.
Amen.
And that
Amen.
Kind of thing. So,
you know, I think, and if you... If you model the opposite of that, not model it, live it.
Live it.
Live it. That's right. Yeah, live it.
If you live
genuinely,
in front of your people, then they're going to live it back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's one of the, you know, I mean, with Clifton is so transparent. It just, you know, you begin to, it makes you feel like you can open up.
Yeah, that's
to
true.
Him.
Yeah,
you know, that's
just
right. part of your personality, and as a pastor, if you're transparent with your people, they're going to feel like they can really open up with you too.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, now that pride they begin to see that pride as a flaw.
That's right.
And so it you can address it that way.
But if you've got two or three prideful people in your church, two or three prideful leaders, they're going to be competing and fighting all the time and create all kinds.
Yeah, that's right.
So pride is, you got to nip it, as Barney Fife says. You got to nip it in the bud. You cannot give it any place to grow at all.
And one of the things that pride does is it reveals the second thing that we're talking about, and that is spiritual and emotional immaturity.
Oh, boy, yeah.
You know, that's talk to us a little bit about how you strategize spiritual maturity at your church, Halleck. I mean, your people know that they need to grow. How do they know? Why do they know that they need to grow?
Well, gee whiz, this is a big one because, again, this goes back a little bit to self-awareness and emotional intelligence, right? because it tends to be that where there is conflict, it's being led by those who are emotionally immature, not self-aware. And so part of your discipleship process, I think, in a church is you have to help people grow in this area. I mean, they have to see themselves for who they really are in Christ, of course, but also we don't do enough in the church, I don't think, to help people grow in people skills.
That's right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, sure.
Like, I think part of what we're doing as pastors, we're teaching the Bible, we're applying the Bible, but in some ways we're helping people grow up, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're old people, you know, you don't treat people like this. You don't talk this way. I mean, some people have never had anybody help them figure out how do you have a conversation? How do you deal with conflict in an appropriate, in a God-honoring way? So I think this is where teaching is so important, not only through your preaching, but classes you're offering. How are you helping to decide in your discipleship process, helping people to understand emotional, spiritual maturity, and how that affects not just me and Jesus, but our community. Does that make sense?
Right.
Which is where conflict can happen.
Because if you're spiritually immature, you can't disagree without being disagreeable.
Yeah.
If you're spiritually mature, you realize we can disagree on some things, both really theologically in terms of, you know, end times, you know, different things like that. We can disagree on what we see there, or we can disagree on some church governance kinds of things without being mad at each other, without, you know, causing a fight. We can agree to disagree on some things. Yep. That comes with spiritual maturity. Spiritual immaturity says it can't, there's only one way, it's my way.
Yes, exactly.
You got to come along with me. And so really, rather than deal with the conflict at the moment, more importantly, it goes back to discipleship and helping people walk like Jesus, become like Jesus, love like Jesus, forgive like Jesus, and be mature in their faith. And again, I agree with Chris. One of the key reasons for church conflict is spiritual immaturity. Yep. Acting like a bunch of little kids, wanting our way, our things, being selfish, not being forgiving, not playing well with others.
Yep.
It's just spiritual immaturity.
Growing in spiritual maturity will prepare you for when the conflict comes to deal with conflict in a godly way.
And sure, as a pastor, when people are acting that way, then you know that they're babies.
Yeah.
You're dealing with babies,
and you can't
expect them to behave like adults.
And 1 Corinthians 14:20 says, brothers, do not be children in your thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Be infants in evil, but in your thinking be mature.
Yeah.
And you just quit acting like a kid.
Yeah, that's
right. But
that's
here's the deal, guys. If you got a church full of spiritual infants, that's on you, and that's on me as the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
We're not giving them opportunities to grow. We're not encouraging them to grow. We're just maybe treating them like babies because that's how they want to be treated.
And you're feeding them like babies.
And you're feeding them like babies, and they're happy with that until they can't get along with each other. And then we go, hey, what's wrong? Well, because you got a bunch of immature spiritual people in there who aren't getting along.
Yep. And that requires taking them off the milk and feeding them the meat.
That's right.
You know, and sometimes we just say, well, they're just not ready for it. Well, let them choke on it.
Let's be honest, it's easier to teach the milk than the meat.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's true.
So in other words, to get to that, which takes us to this third point, you've got to be willing to recognize inflexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Or recognize change.
Yeah.
Are your people going through change, or are they being inflexible?
Right. And one of the things about older churches is they get set in a certain pattern of ways, and it's much more difficult for them to pivot and make changes. We talk about new churches seem to operate from the balls of their feet. They can pivot in an instant. Older churches operate with their heels dug in, and they take them forever to make a decision and ever to make any kind of change. And really, inflexibility and unwillingness to change is often a root cause of conflict because we live in a time now when everything is dynamic. Your neighborhood is changing. The culture around your church is changing. Your evangelism strategies are changing, not your evangelism itself, but your strategies are changing. The way you minister to people is changing.
Yes.
The people's needs are changing. And so if change is something that your church is absolutely not comfortable with, that's going to be a source of conflict because in many ways, Henry Blackaby so wonderfully said, your church can't stay like it is and go where Jesus wants you to go. So you're going to have to make some changes because your community's changing. The people around you are changing. Now, you don't change your core beliefs or the doctrine or the scripture, but certainly the way you reach those people, the way you talk to those people, the way your church ministers to those people, even the way your church is organized and governed, those things may have to adapt and change over time. And older churches are just resistant to change. They just are. Older people are resistant to change.
That's right.
And that's often a source of conflict, inflexibility and change. So you just have to help them. I used to always say, as someone once said, much smarter than me, you change on the margins. You start in a church changing things that they don't mind you changing. Mm-hmm. If there's something out there they don't care that you change, change it.
Yeah.
Even if, you know, so that they walk in and say, oh, this is different.
Right.
Doesn't really bother them, but something different here.
Mm-hmm.
We painted a wall
mm-hmm.
a different color
mm-hmm.
or we did something like that. So find some ways to slowly affect some change and get them a little used to that.
That's good.
But again, it's going to go back to discipleship and them putting the gospel as a priority, reaching people as a priority so they're willing to make the necessary changes.
And that includes teaching the value of change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can't expect them to change as they see no value.
Well, that's true.
That's right.
And so I think you have to, as a pastor, you're changing as a pastor.
Yeah.
Let them understand the value that made in your life and then teach that very principle. The fourth thing that Dr. Crane talks about is these are the things that they're causes of church conflict. And that is, man, oh, man, can we talk about – we should probably do a whole program on this one. Abuses of power.
Yeah.
Well, that, you know, abuses of power means that somebody's in power that probably shouldn't be in power.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And so let's talk about that.
Well, people find a way, man, it's amazing, especially in a normative-sized church, disruptive and destructive people find a way to hide all of that until they get in power.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, they can even perhaps be on your search committee that called you as pastor, and they'll tell you, I'm your biggest supporter, man. I've got your back. And you begin to entrust them with things, and then you realize after it's too late that they're really all about their own power and their own prestige and their own agenda, and you've already entrusted them with some real leadership.
Yeah, that's right.
And now they're using that power not for the gospel but for themselves and for their own agenda, and you got a real problem on your hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you have to be very cautious about who you entrust with real leadership and power in your church. And we're often, in a normative-sized church, we do it too quickly because we're so anxious to have people who
desperate
are willing
sometimes.
To step up and serve.
That's right. Yeah, be slow to lay hands, right? I mean, you've got to, especially with your positions of eldership, deacons. This is to be taken seriously. And I know the temptation when you're like, man, we just need help, but we need to raise up some leaders. Man, take your time. Take your time. A lot of people, here's just the bottom line, cannot handle power. It's like a drug. What's the movie I'm thinking of? You guys are like, what? You're Lord of the Rings guys, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, Kyle.
Kyle looks like a Lord of the Rings.
Is Gollum? Is that the you know, the ring, the whole? Yeah, well, I just think of that. That's a freaky dude in that movie, by the way.
Yeah.
But I just think about there are just people who Jesus doesn't have their whole heart, man, and they can't. They literally can't handle it with power, and that's what you're saying. They turn. They'll turn on
right.
you.
Right. And some of these people have no power anywhere else in their life.
But in the church, they can
not get in their job, sometimes not even in their home.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yep.
So you give them a little role in the church, and they can't handle
That's
it.
That's right. That's right. So we've got to be really discerning and take your time.
Well,
sure.
a person, and people need to know this, just because you have power doesn't mean you're a leader.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
And that's where the problem is.
Yeah.
And sometimes people who are leaders don't have power.
And what you can do is you can look, as Dr. Crane says here, if you notice that people in leadership and power with a power position in your church, if they're using that to hurt people, then you've got to deal with that.
Mm-hmm.
If they're causing people to love Jesus less and enjoy Jesus less, then they're not using that power appropriately.
Yes.
So let's talk about some of the common characteristics of people who are abusing power.
Oh man!
I mean,
pride. We've hit some of these. There's selfishness. They're about their agenda.
There's definitely insecurity. It makes them feel powerful and feels like control over somebody else. The idea that I get to control other people. The idea that I'm made much of.
Yep.
The idea that I get my way. Maybe no place else in this world I get my way, but I'm going to get my way here.
They're not teachable, I would say. There's not a humility there. I would say, here's the other thing about folks like this. Typically, the people around them see it in them as well.
Oh, true. That
Do you know what I mean?
That's very true. Yeah.
And that's what makes it really awkward.
And they have cliques.
That's right. It's like poison that can, you know, creep into the lives of others.
Well, that takes us to the fifth point that Dr. Crane talks about, and that is church politics.
Oh, boy.
Boy,
yeah.
This is... Church politics, there ought to be a course in seminary on the church politics.
People develop into little cliques around the strangest things, and it's different in every church. It might be around the youth leader. It might be around the music. It might be around the senior adult class. It might be around the budget. It might be around the building. It might be around a particular ministry that the church has, maybe a ministry of a clothing ministry or some kind of outreach ministry. But those things become little islands in themselves, and people become very defensive about those things and competitive about those things. And then you just, this whole politics comes up of who's going to get the most attention, who's going to get the most church budget, and you just go, where is the oneness in all of this?
Yeah,
Christ is the head, we're all the body. And there's no way of knowing. These politics can come from the strangest things. There's no sense to them, but every church has these little pockets of group, because the adversary does that. He wants to pull us apart. He wants to cause us to be against each other, and so we gather our little groups around us. How many times, guys, how many times have you heard people say, well, I wonder who's with us on this? Well, these people are and these people are, but I don't think they are. And that's pre-church split stuff right there. And you start saying, well, who's for this and who's against this? And then people start talking to each other. And now with social media and on Facebook and Twitter, and they get on there and start doing that, and they start pushing for their side and for their agenda. Man, it is a bad place when that happens.
Especially when they're using social media. Because now it's beyond the walls of the church.
That's right.
And now you've got some real problems there.
I think proactively what you have to do, again, all of this is this is leadership. You've got to affirm people. You know, I served with a pastor of who was a great shepherd over, and he was a pastor of a large church for many, many years. And he used to always say, you know, we'd kind of make it a joke, but he'd say, you know, everybody's got their thing that they're passionate about, right?
Yep.
And so he'd say, listen, my experience is not your obligation.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, just because I've experienced, so this, say you have some retreat
mm-hmm.
that's just unbelievable for you and God meets you. Now all of a sudden, everybody's got to go on this retreat. Mm-hmm. This has got to become a top priority for our church, you know?
Right.
Or whatever. I read this book. We need to buy copies for the whole women's ministry or men's ministry, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
My experience is not your obligation. And I think you have to talk about that and say, hey, praise God for the different ways that he's wired us. And we're growing in different ways and we're passionate about different things.
That
this is what it means
so good
to be a body. And we need all the pieces. But friends, not all of us are going to be passionate about the same things, and we can't expect one another to be. And that's okay. That's actually how it's supposed to be.
That is gold, man. That is so good, because that's often where these little pockets of political things break
exactly.
up. You know, I love this ministry, this retreat, this thing, and who's got the most important. That's a good
and if
word.
And that's where if you don't align, if we're not addressing it proactively, then all of a sudden you become the enemy because you don't care about what I care about.
That's right. Mm.
And that's how the devil gets in there.
Yeah, and then the pastor's not for this; he's against.
Yeah, you don't care about me.
Yeah,
yeah. If the pastor doesn't support me,
that's exactly
then
right.
He's against
which
me.
Which brings him up to number six, which is unclear authority.
Mm. Yeah,
conflict arises among church and staff members when authority is unclear.
Well, yeah, I mean, people are going to, if they think they have some authority, they're going to exercise it because, and they don't have authority. That means somebody who has the authority hasn't acted appropriately,
right,
or efficiently. And so unclear authority is and you know what we do in most churches? Well, what do our bylaws say?
Yeah.
That becomes the authority.
Or, you know, one of the things, Brian Croft, our friend Brian Croft, has a really good presentation where he puts it up on the screen, a slide, you know, who's in charge and who makes decisions. You know, in a normative-sized church, this is what Brian has said. It's not really clear who has the final yes, but a lot of people can have the final no.
Mm.
You know, and so who has the final yes? We got to take it to the deacons. You got to take it to the church council. Got to take it to the entire church. Who really makes the ultimate decision? Where's the real power? You know, maybe a church of 40 people. It's not like it's IBM or something. You know, but in this church of 40 people, if we want to do something or we want to add to the budget or we want to – Who is it? Where's the real power? And is it even the deacons? Or is it a couple of family members who don't have any particular official elected role, but if they say no, it's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. That's right.
And so the less clear the organizational structure is and how decisions are made, the more room there is for conflict. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, that's good.
And I think one of the reasons, and you listen to me guys out there who get all upset because all these young pastors want to have elders, and you don't know why. I think one of the reasons they want to have elders is that in their mind, and probably so, it's a clarity of decision making. It clears it up.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it is deacons or church council or what do we bring to the whole church and what do we not bring to the whole church?
That's right.
Who gets to vote on this? And in a church of 40 or 50 people, it becomes impossible sometimes to make quick decisions or healthy decisions because nobody knows who can have the ultimate yes, but a whole bunch of people can say no.
Well,
and I think when you do that, that's when you really set up some problems and have some real potential for church conflict.
Mm. And then you add to that the final point, and that is personality differences.
Oh, man.
And you've got a mess.
We do. And we just have to, you have to, just like Mark said, just because it means a lot to me doesn't mean everybody has to do it.
Yeah.
And I need to love everybody in my church, but I don't have to be best friends with everybody in my church,
that's right. That's
if that makes any sense at all, right?
But they need to know you love them.
They need to love them, and you have compassion for them, and you will be sacrificially helpful in giving to them. But it doesn't mean you got to go fishing together, you got to spend time together, because sometimes we're just different personalities, and we just have different, you know, things, and it's okay.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And so we got to understand that personality differences are normal this side of heaven. And one day, we're not going to have those.
Yeah.
One day, the person that just kind of makes you feel awkward in the wrong way, one day we're going to be in heaven, it's all going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But here on earth, we kind of battle through that, and we get through it anyway. And we do it by by focusing on Jesus and our love for him and our love for the gospel, and that helps us be able to come together with people that normally we would have personality differences
mm-hmm.
with.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that you can handle that on this side of heaven is just say to that person, you know, when you get to heaven, you're not going to be like you are now.
No, you're going to be all right, finally.
You're going to finally be okay.
You're going to be okay.
Anyway, thank you guys so much for spending time with us and listening to this. We hope that learning to deal with conflict is it can't be done in one podcast. But at least Dr. Crane has touched on some subjects that maybe you can address, first of all, in your own mind and then with some of your people and talk about these things. And, of course, these notes are in the show notes, so you're welcome to them. And thank you so much for taking time. Thanks to Midwestern Seminary for hosting us and to the North American Mission Board for making all of this possible. And thank you for you for just taking time to listen. God bless you.
Thanks for joining us today on Revitalize and Replant. This podcast is brought to you by the North American Mission Board, where we help dying or struggling churches regain health for the glory of God and the good of their communities. If you found this conversation helpful, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform. To learn more about becoming a replanting pastor or to explore resources about revitalization for your own church, visit churchreplanters.com.